Hey guys, welcome to the Indie Game Development Podcast. Here we tackle the challenges of indie game development head on, from the technical to the emotional, and talk about the secrets to conquering self-doubt on your journey to crafting games that people will love. Subscribe so you never miss an episode, and if you haven't already done so, give us a rating and review so that this podcast gets shared with more people. We'd really, really appreciate it. Ready? Let's go. Lately, if you have not heard, the whole landscape of game development is changing. Just weeks into 2024, there were 6,500 layoffs that had already been announced in the news. AAA studios are struggling to make money and are focusing less on fun in their games and more on monetizing their games. And unfortunately, it seems to work, with games like Diablo Immortal bringing in over $525 million in its first year. Mobile games are inundated with ads and gem purchases, and AI has made hard-earned knowledge easier to gain than ever before. And this is only going to exponentially increase the flood of games that are getting released to Steam in the future. So we have to ask ourselves, how can indie developers sift their way through all of this chaos and all of this crap and actually release a game that stands out compared to the rest? Because that's what we're all here. That's what we're all trying to figure out how to do. How can we make a game that stands out from the crowd? And to answer this, we're going to need to take a journey which started almost 20 years ago. Valve's game, Counter-Strike, was a really, really big hit when it first came out. Everybody loved it, but Valve had a problem. Every time that Valve wanted to patch the game, players had to download the files from Valve's servers, and those servers would sometimes get overloaded, and then people wouldn't be able to download anything. So Valve made the decision to create a larger and more robust infrastructure, but instead of just making a patch delivery service, they also added on to it and expanded it more than they needed so that it could act as a digital marketplace. Obviously, this played out really well for them. And with the release of Half-Life 2 in 2004, players were more than happy to install Steam in order to get access to that game. Between the years 2005 and 2010, Steam's library and backlog of games continued to grow. They just got more and more it accumulated. And in 2009, an engine called Unity Indie was discontinued in favor of a free engine just called Unity. Unity's asset store was released in 2010, and the engine continued to massively improve over the next 5 years. And once 2015 hit, Unity was up to version 5, which is actually the version that I started on. I remember version 5 really well. It was great. Which gave users improved lighting, audio, and visual effects. By this point, by the time Unity 5 was out, you could make a game with high fidelity graphics by yourself or with a small team. It really wasn't that different from the Unity engine that's out today. A lot of it has improved, but you know, I can compare it, and a lot of it has stayed the same. Unity 5 was very robust. And in March 2015, Epic Games released Unreal Engine 4 for free and promised that all future updates would be free as well. Making an engine free was obviously working, because in 2018, the now former Unity CEO said that basically half of all current games were built using Unity. I don't really know where that number comes from. I do think that we have to assume that he's lumping mobile games into the mix in order to get that number, because a lot of mobile games are made using Unity. And when we look at Steam's statistics, this was right around the time that Steam really, really started to take off. You can look online and you can find a graph of how many games were released per year in Steam, and 2018's really started where it started to take off. Top quality engines were completely free to use at this point, with small fees or revenue shares really only impacting top-selling games. Some pretty epic content creators were starting to emerge around this time, like Brackies, if you know that name at all. He was the Unity tutorial guy. When I first got into Unity, he was like one of the only channels in existence that actually taught other people how to do things in Unity. So if you wanted to know how to do something in the Unity engine, you went to Bracky's channel. Every single video he posted had hundreds of thousands of views, which is pretty rare for a tutorial channel. And with content creators like him and more content creators like him coming out, a flood of other developers jumped onto the platform to share their knowledge and experience, the platform being YouTube. And if you fast forward to today, there are probably thousands, I'm certain of it, there's thousands of websites, YouTube channels, and other free resources. Doesn't matter which engine you're talking about or what experience level you're at, there is a YouTube channel out there for you. And then in November of 2022, ChatGPT was released to the public. And now there are competitors cropping up everywhere to help you with basically any task you can imagine, from code to art and texture generation. And I think that some of the game engine companies can see where this trend is leading, because some of them are doubling down on AI integration. Though at the time of recording this, I only know for sure that Unity is working on this AI integration at the moment. So games are getting easier and easier and easier to make for smaller and smaller teams. But as hardware has continued to accelerate over the years, AAA studios are having to work harder and harder to keep up with the graphical demands of players. And this is despite the tools continuing to get better and better. They still can't keep up with the demand. And what a lot of these AAA companies have learned and are continuing to learn is that they can make money with behavioral psychology. The CEO of Tribeflame gave a now pretty infamous talk that you can find online on this topic, and is quoted saying,
"So the tricks on how to monetize a game well, some of you will probably be slightly shocked by all the tricks I have listed here, but I'll leave the morality of it out of the talk. We can discuss it if we have time later."
That was kind of this infamous opening line that he gave before he went on this whole spiel and, you know, divulged all of these different tricks that mobile game companies can use to monetize their games. These studios will also crank out the same game over and over and over with a new coat of paint. And, you know, Call of Duty is always the game that comes to mind for me when I think of this strategy. And they do this because they know those games are going to sell. And this is actually only continuing to increase. AAA game companies are wanting to risk producing new IPs less and less and less, because there is always the chance that a new IP might not sell well. Whereas something like a fresh new coat of paint on Call of Duty year after year, they can count on a certain number of sales being made. Right? Why take a risk with a fresh idea when you can release something that you know is going to sell? AAA companies are primarily run by investors. They have investors that they have to answer to, so money is always the first thing on their mind. So with AAA studios growing more and more desperate to cash grab in whatever way possible, and games getting easier and easier to make, and therefore a higher amount of competition when we decide to release our games, what can we do? If you're here, you're listening to this podcast, you're probably either an indie dev or you're an aspiring indie dev. So what can we do to combat against all of this? How do we fight our way through the competition and get our games played while avoiding some of what I would call the more disgusting practices that are growing more popular with AAA companies in order to cash grab as much as possible from their players? Number one, what I would say is, I would start by saying embrace the changes to the landscape. The landscape's always going to be changing. You got to embrace it. AI and all the good and the bad stuff that comes with it, it's here. All right. You're not doing yourself a favor by resisting it, because it's not going anywhere. It is here, and it doesn't really matter whether you like it or not. Some people are going to utilize these things to be better, and some people won't. And some of those people will fall because they don't. There are a lot of legal and moral questions around this that are going to get resolved in time, you know, revolving around AI and all that stuff. There's a whole lot up in the air right now. But right now, there are tools out there that can help you code faster, produce concept art to help you with your mood board, ensure that you have scalable architecture, you know, and those are just a few examples off the top of my head. There's so much more that you can do with these AI tools that exist right now. If you ignore these tools because you don't like them or they don't make you feel like a quote unquote real game developer, right? Because you're not doing it 100% yourself if you're using AI, then you're producing your game slower than someone who does not ignore these tools. And that's a problem. You're shooting yourself in the foot if you do that. Games are always going to need a human touch. That is not going to change anytime soon. But resisting this changing landscape and not making use of some of these honestly incredible tools that exist, you're shooting yourself in the foot because they can help you as long as you don't rely on them too much or use them as a crutch. The second thing that I would say to help us combat this changing game dev landscape is you need to fall in love with marketing. And I know marketing has like a cringe factor at best, right down to like disgust and hatred at its very worst, right? Some people just absolutely hate marketing. That's just how it is. Some people, they just don't like it. They don't like marketing. This is made really evident to me on YouTube, especially. Channels that actually utilize their audiences to make money and provide for their family are often disliked. It's kind of weird and it's unfortunate for those people, but I do totally understand this. I actually dropped out of a marketing program 2.5 years into college after day one of my third year selling course. What happened was my professor in my sales class, he would toss a pen around the room and he would say, "Sell me this pen." And he was trying to get us to understand something. And I'm not really clear on what the message was anymore, but I think he was trying to get us to emotionally sell him on the pen rather than, you know, talk about the features of the pen and, oh, it's blue and it's made of this type of plastic and whatever. He was trying to get us to emotionally sell him on this pen, not talk about the features. So he would throw the pen around the room and he would get you to sell it. And I did not want any part of that. I managed to not get the pen thrown to me and I left that class and I went and I dropped out just like that. That was just, I did not like marketing and selling in particular, I did not like. So that's a little story there, but it doesn't matter. It doesn't really matter if you don't like marketing, because here's the thing. As an indie developer, you are one of the last suppliers on the gaming market that actually cares about making a good quality product, which sounds weird because you would think AAA game companies care about that, but they don't. That is not their number one priority. Why do you think they keep shipping games that are broken or have all of these different bugs? They do not care about quality. They want a return on their investment, which is, you know, time and money. But you, as an indie developer, hopefully you are creating your game from your heart, right? And how could you not? Your game is your baby for most of us. And since you're taking the time to craft a piece of art, it deserves attention. If no one knows it exists, no one's going to play it. And if no one buys your game, then you're not going to make enough money to focus on making the next game that's going to be even better because you're more experienced at that point. And maybe the market needs that next game. I get it. Sales and marketing leaves a foul taste. But if you are an indie developer, you're going to need to learn to fall in love with it in some form. Okay? Because, or there's just a very high likelihood that your game is going to fail because your game has to be marketed. And if you are going to market effectively, if you hate marketing, it's just going to show, or you're not going to do it as effectively as you otherwise could. So this is going to require getting out of your comfort zone and really selling the shit out of your game and making people want to buy it. And that's weird and cringy and uncomfortable, but it's a part of being an indie developer. And the third thing I would say is the AAA industry is leaving a really large gap in its wake, okay? There is a market of gamers that they're not casual gamers, okay? They don't want to pay for season passes on Battle Royale games, right? That's the route that a lot of AAA game companies are taking, right? You, as an indie developer, you can fill this gap that is being left behind by AAA companies, right? AAA companies often, they're not very focused on 2D games anymore. And if they do make a side-scrolling game, it's usually a 2.5D game, right? There's a hole that is being left behind by the AAA industry because they're always moving forward to the newest, the shiniest, and the brightest thing. Indie developers can make use of this. I don't really feel like the future of the AAA industry is very bright. They are burning bridges with their players left and right by consistently producing lazy games to please their shareholders. And gamers are hopefully, honestly, in my opinion, hopefully they're going to get tired of it and stop buying into it. And either the AAA companies will go back to caring about quality or they're just not going to make it. But in the meantime, this is the time for indie developers to keep the fun alive in video games. We are the ones who need to take the weird risks and produce games that are strange or different or, again, weird, because gamers do want that. Hone your skills in your industry to the best of your ability. And I'm not just talking about code, I'm not just talking about art, but marketing and game design principles as well. You're going to need to be good at all of those things and produce the best product that you can, because if you do all of those things, it might just pay off. I know indie developers are always interested in connecting with other indie developers, and it can be hard to find good communities. If you are interested in connecting with some awesome indie devs like yourself, check out our Discord server. We have an amazing community with over 1,700 members at this point. I will leave the link in the description. And as an indie developer, I feel it is my duty to tell you to go to Steam, search Samurado. That is the game that Nikki and I are working on. It's going to be awesome. I don't have a release date for you yet, but go ahead and wishlist it because it's going to be awesome if you like roguelike games. And that is all I got. If you love this episode and you haven't already left a rating and review, please consider doing that now. It really helps the podcast grow and reach more awesome people like yourself. Thanks so much. Bye.